Adam Sandler takes on a serious role once again in Spaceman, the new emotional sci-fi film from Netflix. He plays an isolated astronaut who begins to experience strange things as his marriage is seemingly falling apart. Let's take a look. Welcome everyone to the Atomic Cinema Experiment. I am Peter and I'm joined as always by David.
I come in peace.
This is a science fiction movie podcast. We get together, we talk about a sci-fi movie, it's that simple. And we've got another new release the same week that Dune Part 2 came out. Netflix put a new sci-fi movie, it's called Spaceman, starring Adam Sandler and Carey Mulligan. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We'll start spoiler-free as we always do, but just before we do get started, I'll just say that if you are enjoying the show, hit the like button on YouTube, helps out a bunch if you do, and we'll have got some bonus shows that we do on Patreon every month. We'll tell you more about those at the end of the show, but that is the plan. Also, at the end of the show, David does his sci-fi movie homework, where he goes back and watches a movie that we did on the show before he joined the show, so you can stay tuned for that if you're so curious. I've got a funny feeling. I know what the movie is, I think. Funny feeling.
No doubt. If you've been tuning in, if you've been keeping track of homework, you know there's only one thing it could be. But
so, yeah, we'll get to it. The basic premise of Spaceman is that Adam Sandler plays, I was going to say astronaut. Technically, he's a cosmonaut. And he's in space. He's on a mission to just beyond Jupiter, where there is a mysterious space cloud that has been glowing up the sky pink and purple for the last 4 years in the movie's universe, and he's going out there to investigate it, and he's part of the Trek space program. And I, at first I was thinking, oh, they've got an American for this for some reason, but then I realized as the movie went on that no, he's meant to be Czech. They're just all speaking English, but they're all meant to be Czechoslovakian. So fair enough. You know, once they started saying his name, a bunch of, you know, Jakob, I was like, oh wait, okay, no, he's actually supposed to be foreign. It's just that they're for, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I especially love that this is set in, obviously, like, it's supposed to be modern day. There's evidence that that's supposed to be, but because it's a post-Soviet state, everything looks so 90s, like the whole way through, down to like the phones they're using and the styles that they have.
I wouldn't even go as far to say the mission control room looks more like the 70s, to be honest. Yeah. There was a lot of retro future kind of stuff going on with some of the design. But the big thing in the movie is that he's kind of estranged from his wife, played by Carey Mulligan, who's down on Earth and she's pregnant. And basically a lot of the movie is him trying to deal with the fact that she's not contacting him, and the people on the ground control are trying to kind of reach out to her and find out why. Also, there may or may not be a giant alien space spider that he starts talking to. But
more I'm so happy you bring that up.
More on that in spoilers, though. I don't want to get too much into that, but it is in the trailer, so it's not like a surprise to say that it exists. But, yeah, so that's the basic gist of it. Didn't really know what to expect going into this. Adam Sandler does have a few dramatic gems in his library, Uncut Gems in particular, funnily enough. From a few years ago, is actually a really excellent movie. Obviously, that's not all just down to him. It's down to the writing and direction and all these other things.
Yep.
But it's just an example that when Adam Sandler steps outside of his typical comedy shtick, that it can lead to good things. So, never know.
Hearing about this movie, I purposely avoided the trailer and all that. So, Spider caught me off guard, not going to lie. But hearing about this, I wasn't immediately hit with, oh, an Adam Sandler drama, because I, like you said, I know he can do some dramatic works. I know that is within his potential, but it does have to have a good backing behind it. He's not one of those actors who can just get a good performance out, no problem. He needs the right direction and the right writing to make that happen.
Oh, of course, yeah. We'll get into that. I'll just start with a simple question. David, what did you think of Spaceman?
I absolutely love Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Second time around, not so much. It's, I don't know. There's good things to it. As I was watching it, I was picking out that there were some good moments to it, good like things that it was doing. It had some powerful messaging to it, but throughout the entirety of it, I just felt like I couldn't connect to Adam Sandler's character. And I think part of that is because it's kind of the whole point of his character is that he's very closed off and is not very open with like who he is. But from an audience standpoint, even when we got past that, even when we got to a point where he started to open up, I still felt like I didn't have any real connection with him on an emotional level. And this is a very emotional movie. It is very much driven by that. So all in all, I feel like I left wanting more. I felt like there was so much more under the surface this could have done, but I was just a little bit disappointed by it.
Yeah, you started that off with a comparison to Eternal Sunshine. That movie did spray into my head as I was watching this, but I think part of the problem is that it's not just that. There's Solaris in this movie, there's a little bit of 2001, a little bit of Interstellar. Well, arguably Interstellar already had a bit of 2001 in it, so maybe that's just a sort of knock-on effect to that. But regardless, it's very much an amalgamation of several other great sci-fi movies, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. Like I said, Interstellar, I think, is a pretty great movie, and it's very heavily inspired by 2001. And there's even a moment in this where it does like a visual, which is clearly a reference to Solaris. It straight up does like a visual homage to it. And that's possibly neat. Like, if I loved this movie, I'd probably say, oh, it's nice, they threw a little nod to Solaris. But unfortunately, the script, the direction, the pacing, everything that would make this work doesn't work.
Yeah. I don't know. I was kind of, I feel like writing-wise, I was a little bit off because, like you said, pacing's off. But I think the direction, I think the visual style of it, I actually kind of enjoyed. I actually think that that was interesting the way it was shot and the way it cut between.
I'm going to disagree purely because, not because there's not good individual shots, there is. And not because there's not individual good ideas. But I don't think this director had any like understanding of how to put them together or pace them in a way that made me actually draw into the story and the character. Like, something as simple as the opening act just being slower paced to let us see like his routine, to let us get drawn in slowly to what his mindset is. Instead, it's doing the art house like cutaways immediately. And like you've not earned this shit. You have to kind of, you know, get us into the mood first. Draw us in, and then start to sort of get us into his head. And right away, I was feeling like it was rushing through what the movie wants to ultimately be. But you kind of have to, you know, maybe get there. You have to do it in
You need the opening of Moon, is what you're saying.
Moon's an example, but anything, like any type of, not even just a sci-fi, like any type of drama where you have to draw the audience into the character. You have to give us a grounded baseline. And because the movie's already starting with art house, like, is this just in his head or what, right from the get-go, it's very hard to get, like, a solid footing at the start. So then as the movie progresses, it's, you know, that link's not there. And I don't think it ever achieves that link with the main character, like you said. I was, honestly, the entire back half of this movie, I found myself rolling my eyes a lot. Because, and not because, like, conceptually the things were even that bad. I found that this director wanted to do a bunch of art house things that he'd seen in other movies, and I don't necessarily hate anyone for that, but I don't think the raw story was there to actually make it all work. The case in point that I'll use here is that towards the end of the movie, well, I won't spoil a single thing here, but towards the end of the movie, there's a lot of talk of, oh, if I knew, like, before I left, what I knew now, well, everything I've learned on this journey, if I knew all that, I'd have made different choices. And I was sitting going, but what have you actually learned? I don't feel like I've actually seen a lesson, a teachable moment here. I feel like you've just kind of mumbled through a bunch of flashbacks and now you've kind of changed, I guess. You've kind of realized something.
I agree, but I also think it almost hits on the other side of the spectrum, though, where they are, I felt like they were bashing me over the head with, like, here's what kind of person you need to be, and here's, like, the moral of everything that's going on.
No, I agree. They're bashing you over head with all that, but they never actually give me a convincing moment that it feels like the character actually learns something. And, like, there's something that actually teaches him that moment. So, It's the worst of both worlds, is basically what I'm saying.
Yeah. So, but again, I would put that more down to the writing. I feel like, yes, you're right that the director doesn't make that connection. It does a whole bunch of those art house things like you're saying. But I feel like what I dislike the most of it are the words being said and how the plot is progressing. Everything that's on screen and like the acting choices that are made, the visual motifs that are coming up, I don't have a problem with them. I think what it really comes down to is that when I see Adam Sandler's character, all I see is the blank slate that the audience is supposed to be able to project themselves onto. But because of that, I don't care about him. And that doesn't work for an emotional piece like this. Also, just want to bring up the director, most famously for me and you, directed the entirety of Chernobyl, which I love that. We both love that. There's significant qualities to Chernobyl that are fantastic there. So I feel like it is coming down more to the writing than it is the directing in this case.
To an extent. But here's the thing. A good director would be able to take this material and like do something with it. I feel like what we're seeing here is that he's done episodes of Chernobyl. He's done episodes of Breaking Bad. He's done episodes of other TV shows that are very highly regarded. But clearly, the good writing of those shows is entirely carrying... I mean, that's not to say that he's not doing good things with his job. I'm not saying he's not doing anything or adding anything to it. But this movie's clearly an example to me that he either... I don't know. Either didn't pick a good script, right? Yeah. Possibly. What if he even had that choice? But maybe more to the point is that I feel like a good director can take a script that's not quite there and turn it into something, can kind of like mold it a little bit. And I feel like maybe the limitations of working in a TV show actually help rein him in. This feels like every art house idea he's ever wanted, he's just splooged over the screen. And it felt like, you know, baby's first independent film a little bit.
I get that. It definitely... Because of how much it was bashing me over the head, I definitely got the sort of vibe of, oh, this is too high concept for general audiences. We have to add in a little bit just to be able to tone it down for them. There's one part where they're saying how, oh, these particles or whatever, they contain something that your human words cannot put into understanding. There's no way for you to conceptualize this. And then they get to the end and show what's in there, and it's like, no, we can conceptualize that pretty easily. Like, that's... You could describe that. That's not that hard to do.
Yeah. It's such a shame, because I feel like I can see a version of this that I like, and that's probably not surprising, because it's taken a lot of other movies. But it really does feel like, oh, this is the kindergarten version of Solaris or something like that. Which, you know, There's a place for a better version of this movie. As it is, I'm sure it'll connect with some people, but it's had a very middling response critically. I suspect it's just going to fade into obscurity. There's definitely parts of it that feel kind of Netflix-y, which, by the way, Netflix and their goddamn bitrate on 1080p is atrocious.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, I noticed that.
Like, especially movies set in space, because this is a couple of times I've noticed this now. Like, every time there's a shot of space or any remotely dark scene, it's just blocky crap all over the screen.
There are two things that the internet is not good at, and that is showing very small differences between, like, dark colors, because the internet just wants to say, it's all zeros, we're just going to zero it out. And a whole bunch of tiny little particles that need to be rendered separately. This movie has both for the entirety of the runtime. So that bitrate problem kept coming up over and over here.
There's no excuse for it. There's absolutely no excuse for why Netflix's bitrate is such shit. When other places are doing a better job, there's no excuse. It's just them being cheap, which is shocking given that they keep raising their goddamn prices every year.
Well, they got to pay for Adam Sandler's yearly contract to keep him here on Netflix.
Yeah, they got to pay for Adam Sandler and the WWE, which they've just paid for like rights to for 5 years, goddammit. Anyway, I had to mention that, because it's honestly kind of shocking to me every time I watch something in 1080p. I think the 4K is fine, but the 4K is very expensive to actually get every month. Of course. So a lot of people aren't bothering with it. So
I mean, that's probably part of their business thing, is they're just going to slowly make 1080p worse until everyone's just like, fine, I'll shell out the money.
Yeah. I will hope it doesn't work. I hope they go under, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Screw them. Yeah, so that was pissing me off throughout as well, I have to admit. But, yeah, it felt a little bit Netflix-y at times. Like, every time it cut to, like, Mission Control, it kind of felt like, I don't know, maybe it's just because they got a guy from The Big Bang Theory to play the main role that was in the Mission Control, but there was something about it that just kind of felt a little bit, like, I don't know, I feel like an actual...
I know what you're saying. It is hard to put into words.
Yeah, it's weird, but there's a vibe. Even in this like ultra art house attempt that this movie is, there's still a little bit of that Netflix vibe kind of creeping in somehow.
The thing that was getting to me, that this movie didn't do anything story-wise that related to it, but visually I kept getting, was Cloverfield Paradox.
Like, which was also a Netflix movie.
Exactly. And that's why I feel like it's that sort of Netflix feel. Every time we're up in the space station, I'm like, it feels like you sunk a lot of money into this, like just from a logical standpoint of everything going on here. But I still can't help but feel all the cut corners, all the tiny little things you did in order to like shave off a dollar here or there.
Yeah. Yeah. I can definitely see that. So yeah, honestly, frustrating watch. I feel like it's also a waste. I got excited when I saw Max Richter was the composer, because his music tends to be very, very, very good, and he's the right choice for an emotional sort of art house indie movie for sure. But unfortunately, this one was shit, so he was kind of wasted on it.
I mean, honestly, that's how I felt seeing the director, because I saw Chernobyl, Breaking Bad. I'm like, yes, please, I'll take four. And then I sat down to watch it, and I'm like, so when's that going to start? When do I get that?
I think it's just a sad case of like some directors are better with the limitations of being told this is what the style of our TV show is. You have to adhere to it. And clearly, you know, like, and I'm not saying he didn't necessarily, I mean, with Chernobyl being the only director, I'm sure he got to be creative in how some of that was portrayed, but it still had to align to the script that had been, a very good script that had been written for it. So, maybe the writers, Yaroslav Kalflar and Colby Day are the culprits here more than him, but I don't think the director was helping.
Yeah, it is definitely based off of a book.
That'll be one of those
The original one is like Spaceman in Bohemia, I think is what it was called. Or Spaceman of Bohemia, that's what it is. That's Yaroslav was the author of that, so I guess the other one adapted it. It's relatively new. It seems like it's just the kind of thing that Netflix got the rights to, and then they were like, yep, throw it out. Let's make a movie out of it.
I wonder if this is another case of like the book's a lot more in the character's head, so the movie adaptation just didn't do a good job of translating that into a visual medium where we could sort of see it in the performance or whatever. Because there's definitely movies and shows where you get a sort of more sort of like closed off main character who you still kind of get to see what they're thinking. You still sort of, the cracks still open up, and that's maybe goes back to what I was saying about start off with showing their routine so that when something changes in their routine, we can see, oh, something's off here, something's changed, rather than just be kind of told it by the characters on the ground or by it playing flashbacks at the right moments just to explain things to us. You know, let us sort of experience and notice that something's breaking down here so that we can feel like we're actually engaged in the material.
Yeah, I think another big part of it, especially for the difference between book to TV, is that because he needs to be able to talk, there's kind of immediately they're getting rid of this central theme that they're trying to establish, which is he is alone. He is lonely out here. There is no one else for him out here. But immediately we get introduced to the fact that he can just talk to Mission Control and Peter at any time. He has a faster than light phone that allows him to just have real-time conversations with people back on Earth.
Yeah, that feels like a mistake just based on the themes. Like, if you're going to be able to have him contact like ground control or whatever, like at least make it this heavy delay so that he's waiting for messages and there's like waiting time. But honestly, this idea that he like I don't even think we should see Mission Control. I don't think we should see Mission Control looking for the wife. I think we should see what we see of the wife, like, or her side of the story. And I think we should, obviously, he should be unaware of what's happening in there. I think it would probably be a lot more effective if we just learn about their marriage and what they've been through just based on both of them. It feels like all the characters at Mission Control are all just kind of there to, like, explain everything to us.
Yeah.
And I don't know, just make it, almost dumb it down, just for the sake of making it more of a followable, traditional movie, even though that's clearly not what it wants to be. So...
That's what I was saying. Of it felt like all this art house stuff is going on, but there's still this underlying current of like, it's too high concept for the general Netflix audience. It's too high concept for the general Adam Sandler audience. We need to dumb it down so that they're going to get it.
I can't imagine even with this movie as it is, I can't imagine it was made with the idea that the general Adam Sandler audience is the target.
That's true. That's fair.
Right.
But I don't know Netflix's backroom executive stuff. I don't know the kind of stupid decisions they make.
Maybe if Rob Schneider had voiced the spider, maybe you'd have a point. But
oh, God. Oh, man. You just made, like, the worst idea in existence.
Instead, it's Paul Dano, for anyone who's curious.
Yes.
But
which almost gets it back up to that art house stuff again, just based off of my experience with Paul Dano. I'm just like, oh yeah, no, he's like a small-time actor, even though he's been in tons of big movies of late.
Yeah, I thought the dialogue for the spider kind of annoyed me as well, actually, because it was very, again, it almost felt dumbed down just so that like he was spelling out the themes of the movie to the audience, when I felt like if you just had the spider being inquisitive and asking questions, you could sort of like take like things from the responses that he's getting or not getting and maybe tell that he's reacting a certain way to what Sandler's saying to him. But instead, it feels like every time the spider makes an observation, he has to like sort of, oh, I now understand this about your species. You do this and you do that. And this is the way you think. Why do you do that? Like,
yeah.
Okay. Like not like I am not, I'm not extrapolating anything from this because you're just telling all of it to me.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying, bashing over the head with it. It all comes down to the spider character because we get the observations, and rather than letting the audience sit with it and think, oh, I wonder what that symbolizes, or letting Adam Sandler like act at all and show him working through stuff, the spider just says like, oh, okay, I get it. You have trouble letting people in, and that's because of this event that happened in your childhood. And we're just gonna walk through every step of your life and explain how A follows B follows C. And it's like, okay, movie, I guess I'll just read the book then. Thanks.
Yeah, it's a bad movie. I'm just, you know, I don't know if I quite said that and made that clear after David waffled and wouldn't commit to a simple statement, but it's a bad movie.
I didn't realize that my opening statement had to be three words. It was good or it was bad.
I mean, it could be more than that, but you're very non-committal, so you're sort of like, you try to be diplomatic about it. Like, you're upset or scared of upsetting anyone.
I absolutely am. However, with this particular one, I was more so trying to point out the fact that I kept wanting it, and I kept feeling like it was just on the verge of having something. Like, maybe it was just the writing, maybe it was the directing. I don't know exactly what to point to here, but, like, there was always a moment where I kept expecting it to do something really interesting. Like, very early on in this movie, you're presented with this nightmare sequence, and it's just immediately shown that it's a nightmare, but it is presented at first in a way where it's real. And that immediately gave me the thought of, okay, he's an unreliable narrator. They are specifically saying he's having trouble sleeping. I was fully waiting for like that to develop, for that to become something where it's this like super interesting plot of how much of this is actually real, how much is not. And the movie just never did anything with that. And that kept happening throughout the movie, where it sets up something that I think is a really cool concept, and then it just doesn't quite deliver on it.
I mean, the movie, that whole idea of like, is this just all on his head because he's losing his mind, or is this really happening? Is there actually a spider? I feel like that was a question I had for the first like 5-10 minutes where the spider showed up. Mm-hmm. And then as the movie went on, it just kind of felt like it didn't matter, but not in a good way. Like, I don't mean it didn't matter in the sense that it's still making its points. It didn't matter in a weird way where by the end I'm like, well, I guess in a way it could have been either, but either way I'm unsatisfied.
Yeah, exactly.
So
it's because it left those breadcrumbs to begin with, and you just wanted them to pick up that trail. You wanted them to say, either make it a point of the movie, like talk about the fact of does it matter, does it not, or come down on one side or the other. But in the end, they were just like, eh, forget about it, doesn't matter. I'm like, you spent 10 minutes setting it up. What do you mean it doesn't matter?
All right, we're for spoilers.
I guess, yeah. Sure.
Spoilers for Spaceman. You've been warned, everyone. I'm not going through this in order. I cannot stomach the thought of going through this in order. Also,
honestly, it doesn't matter to do it in order.
I have a confession to make, actually.
What did you do?
Well, I was about 5 minutes in the middle where I fell asleep during. Right. No, I went back afterwards and checked out those 5 minutes, so I have an idea of what went on. But I fell asleep at one point, and I woke up, and the spider who eventually Sandler names was Hanush.
Hanush,
yes. And Hanush is like, you're actually kind of a dick, Sandler. I'm going to leave you now. And then Sandler's begging him for him not to go. The idea that he's actually become friends with the spider and he's accustomed to him now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, I have no idea why he's leaving. What did he find out about Sandler that made him want to leave? So,
I love that's almost like the emotional low point of the movie. Like, that's the point where the characters are at their lowest, and you're like, oh, whatever.
Oh, I just passed out. I was just so freaking bored for large chunks of this. And it's not because I don't like thoughtful, emotional art house movies, because I do. I love them when they're good. I really, really do. This just felt like a Rolodex of moments and themes from other movies that the director and the writers wanted to put in there. And maybe the book's better. Maybe the book is a lot more in-depth. Maybe the book's better crafted. Maybe this was a victim of trying to squeeze in everything or having to take things out to make it, you know, a certain runtime, or maybe just the lack of the vision to actually translate it properly. Because not everyone can translate a book into a movie. It's a different medium, you know. There's different strengths and weaknesses. You have to actually carry that over, you know, and tell the story in a different ways that works for a movie. But regardless, this was not working for me, and it kind of just the pacing right from the get-go. When I mentioned earlier on that there's like a visual homage to Solaris, I was thinking that a little bit during the opening, because the opening shots are of Sandler in his spacesuit walking in like a creek. We see that creek again towards the end of the movie, and the shot that's specifically a homage to Solaris, and it's unmistakable, is there's a shot of just like some of the seaweed in the water, like you know, waving about. That's from Solaris. Like, that is just straight up from that movie. There's no ifs, ands, or buts.
Got it.
So
that'll be one of my homework eventually. I'll get there.
It will. A movie that also, funnily enough, inspired one of Nolan's films, not Interstellar though. Solaris actually inspired Inception in a lot of ways, but yeah, I'll let you discover why for yourself.
Yeah,
so
I'll put that on the top tier priority. I'll get it done before the end of the year.
Oh, by all means, that's fantastic. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean,
very beginning of the movie, just to set up the entire, like, everything of it is, we get that like half-baked sort of version of the day in the life thing for him. It's been about 6 months. He's been out in space flying to this thing. He's only got like a week left before he gets there. And he does this video call back to Earth where he's asked by this young girl, are you the loneliest man in like the universe? That's what I've heard, that you're the loneliest man.
You were going to say the world, and you realized at the last second that it couldn't be world because he's not on the world.
Honestly, I was going to say galaxy, but I was like, I don't think she says the word galaxy. But no, she says, are you the loneliest man? And it hits him. You could tell it like registers with him in a way, but he just kind of gives the political answer and then moves on. And then we very quickly discover that his wife hasn't been taking his calls because they used to call every day, and she has actually left a message for him that is not delivered to him, their version of NASA has just stopped it from going up there.
Yeah, we see the space agency watching it, and it's basically her breaking up with him and saying she's leaving him. And she knows it's horrible to do it when he's in space like this, but she just has to.
And she's also pregnant with his kid.
Yeah, and space agency lady's like, we can't show him this. He will probably commit suicide on our spaceship, and the whole mission will be awash. We have to deal with this. Let's go talk to her and try and convince her to, like, maybe wait until he comes back before she drops any major bombs like this. I think there's a couple of things here that feel like mistakes to me just right off the bat with this.
Okay.
Like, I mean, I'm not saying we needed this. I think if we took out all the space agency stuff, it might have worked if we just started the movie with him worrying, like, why has his wife not been in touch? And then we start to show her side of things alongside his plots. I could see that working. But my initial reaction to this when it started up, and we're like, okay, we've got this context now where she is leaving him, she's driving to her mother's, they're trying to block this message, and he keeps asking, you know, why is my wife not called? And they're making up excuses like, the connect thing's down, or like, she's
visiting her mother. Yeah. She was away for a few days.
They're just kind of stalling.
Mm-hmm.
And all I could think was, you know, maybe actually seeing their last conversation, like the last time they spoke, might have like let us like connect with them a little bit if we saw them actually interact with each other before they spend the whole movie not interacting. That might have been a positive change for me.
Yeah, I think there's a point that the spider makes later on, which is how he only misses her now that she's gone. It's not something where he was like constantly doing. It was only once she left. So I think maybe they could have had an interesting beat where he's replaying old calls now that she's not calling in, and we see him growing. Like, you can see in the calls, he's very cold while he's talking to her, like, at the time, but him revisiting the calls is proof that he is missing her and growing more and more lonely and desperate for that attention.
That'd be a good way of showing it, because honestly, the movie itself, there's not a whole lot of showing. It's a lot more telling. It's a lot more of him just asking more and more, like, where she is and why he can't call her, which isn't this inherently bad on its own, but that would be a good visual way of showing it. The only time we actually see one of the old calls is when one of them mysteriously starts playing on its own. And he's like, why is this playing? And yeah, we do hear a little bit of that coldness that you were talking about. But it kind of, I mean, maybe I guess the intention is, especially if the spider's just still on his head, is that, you know, he did play this message because he is missing her. And this is just a conversation he's really having with himself whenever he's talking to the spider. But just in terms of the setup, it felt like it was missing something to really get me engaged. Honestly, maybe even given his, because obviously we get these flashbacks, right? These memories in his head as the movie goes on. And one of the key things that's happening is that the spider seemingly is telepathic and is watching these memories with him.
Yeah.
So we get these like sort of snippets of key moments. And one that it comes back to a lot is this night they met. You don't actually realize it's the night they met until much later in the film when you see the start of it. But is she keeps calling him Spaceman, obviously the title of the movie, because they're at like a costume party and he's dressed as a spaceman and she's dressed as like a princess or whatever. Mm. And we see like snippets of them being happy, of their first kiss and all those things. And then obviously there's all the sad memories of like them growing more distant, him ignoring her for his career because he wants to go to space. And the big thing being that she was pregnant before and had a miscarriage, and he effectively misses a lot of her grieving and pain because he's in the space program and doesn't want to come home.
That's what the messaging is, like, absolutely, but it's done in a way that makes the character almost irredeemable for me, which is she suffers this miscarriage.
She's crying on the phone, begging for him to come home.
And he's just like, oh, you know, I can't come home right now. And she's like, oh, I bet you could. Like, you just got to try. And then he says, oh, hold on, there's an emergency. I got to go. And the emergency is he burned his eggs. Like, he was making breakfast, and he just burned his eggs. Well, I'm like, bro, dude.
Well, obviously, it's just an excuse, for one. Yeah, but I actually have thoughts on the eggs, because the alien spider asks for eggs early on in the film when he first starts talking to him. And then there's this scene with the eggs and him overcooking them. I feel like this was supposed to thematically link to the pregnancies, was all this egg talk. There was a lot of egg talk, and I feel like that's what it was meant to link to. So, I mean, it feels insensitive almost to say that him burning his eggs is representation of a miscarriage, but it kind of, I think that's what they were going for.
Yeah, I don't think it's insensitive in a way. I think it's almost representative of how he sees it. she sees it as like, I have lost this child inside of me who like I had with me all this time, and now I feel even more alone. Whereas from his perspective, it's like, okay, we'll try again. Like, no big deal. We'll just crack a few more eggs. There you go. I mean, like, that's all it is.
Yeah, for me, it just feels like a really kind of, like, I mean, it's barely a metaphor as it is, but I'd say it's a really blunt metaphor that's like, again, it's trying to do the smart, like, art house thing, but it feels like it's, I feel like you're kind of almost there, but, like, what you're doing just feels so, like, it feels like something like a 30-year-old would think of. Oh, this will represent the miscarriage, and it'll be so smart, and it'll wow everyone as they get the subtext of it.
It's the sort of thing where it's like, how do I show that a character is closed off and moody? Oh, his curtains were heavy and dark, and no sunlight was let in. That's so smart. No one's ever thought of that.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's like fine to an extent, but it's sometimes metaphors can be kind of laughable when they're like this, but it feels a little bit too silly. But
I mean, if we're talking about the metaphors, the spider literally the whole time is just a metaphor. Like, regardless of if he's real, if he's not,
he's just a
metaphor for his loneliness and guilt towards how he treated his wife the whole time. Like, that's it.
This is the thing. One of my favorite types of story, as it turns out, I've realized this over the years, particularly when it comes to more drama-related things, is, I mean, it doesn't have to be a man. It can be a woman, too. But maybe I relate to the men more just because I happen to be one. But men who have really screwed up, like, have done something bad that they feel deep guilt and regret for, and somehow trying to make it right, it is, like, one of my favorite, like, types of story. It's such a simple thing, right? Mm-hmm. Paris, Texas, one of my favorite movies, is very much about that. It's this Harry Dean Stanton playing this guy who did something horrible that ended his marriage, and you don't really quite get the full context of what he's doing until the very end of the movie, but ultimately it's about trying to make amends and trying to do something right to make up for whatever happened.
Okay.
And I think that kind of like self-reflection and self-analysis to sort of say, okay, who have I been? What have I done wrong? Because the idea of the hope of the story is ultimately that anyone can understand why they've made a mistake or how they made a mistake and can grow. It can become better. And ultimately, that's a very hopeful idea, I think, for a movie to be about.
Yeah.
And the fact that I do like good versions of those stories makes it more frustrating when I'm watching one like this. And I never really feel like I get a, you know, because so much of this backstory for this character is that, oh, his dad was an informant for the Soviets, and it led to this tragic, you know, death that he had. So part of this movie, and it explicitly says this at the end, as he's seen all these memories come flooding back as they're floating through the magic space dust, he's saying, oh, I absolve my father for his sins, and I absolve me of them too. And that line just made me just groan. I'm like,
oh yeah,
you're trying to go for this big dramatic moment where he's making this big, you know, gesture about his past and forgiving himself and his father so he can move on with his life. And I'm just like, you've not earned this. You've not even begun to earn this.
No, that's part of the problem I had with his entire backstory is that, yes, we're told these things happened. We're shown via memory, but like the spider's literally narrating what happens. He's like, oh, your father did this horrible thing, and like he did all this stuff. And then Adam Sandler responds with like, yes, but he was a good man. He was just misguided, blah, blah, blah. And I'm atoning for all the things he did. That's why I'm on this whole mission. He like almost literally says those lines. But I still don't feel like we got enough depth into how he feels about it. Like, this clinical description of like, I feel like I am atoning for what my father did by being in this space mission, and I feel like I have trouble opening up to people because of blankety blank. Like, we're told this stuff, but at no point does the character ever show any level of emotion that says, okay, how do you feel about that
though? Well, here's a good way of putting it, right? Is typically what you do to make the audience feel something for this is that you set up what the backstory is. You set up that there's some incident. Well, how much you explain may vary depending on what it is and how much you want the audience to know. But you set up something, in this case, this tragic backstory where his father was this informant who was killed for being an informant. And also Adam Sandler had this near-death experience because some kids, because of who his father was, threw him in a river. yada, 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 right? We have to see moments in his life where he actively makes these bad decisions, where, you know, he's having a scene with the wife, and you could argue the phone call with the eggs is kind of like the best example we get of it in this movie, but yeah. We need to have some solid scenes where he is making these mistakes, and he is making these mistakes that the audience can at least somewhat understand why he's making these mistakes because of how his past works and how his past makes him feel. You know, simple idea would maybe be like, you know, I don't know. Like, okay, this is a really stupid, I can't think of like a really nuanced comparison, so I'll just go with a more sort of broad, stupid one. But you set up a character in their past, lost a family member in a plane crash. You have a scene where they're at an airport and they're supposed to go on a plane somewhere, but they get scared and they won't go. The audience, without anyone ever saying that he's scared of planes, the audience just gets it. He's scared of planes because this happened in his past. And you feel like you've learned something because you've seen him respond to an action that he's supposed to be doing, but he can't because he's too scared.
It's. I mean, obviously they explain this one a bit heavier, but it's the Truman Show, being afraid of water.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You know, we learn how he feels about it through his actions in the scenes that we're getting. They actually link back to his backstory. In this movie, it never feels like we see him in a situation where his actions are directly understandable because of like what we've already learned about him in the past.
Yeah. There's when I was trying to do that description there, I said the line, "I'm closed off because of blankety blankety blank." That's because I feel like that is his entire character, is that he's closed off. He's unwilling to like open up for even his wife or even the audience. The spider character, everyone has trouble figuring out what this guy is about. But there's nothing in this story that directly says, here's the reason why I'm closed off. They kind of try to play with it with the father backstory, but like, I feel like that's specifically linked to why he decided to join the cosmonaut program and like try to honor his country. I don't feel like it explains at all why emotionally he has trouble opening up to people, because we never actually see him interacting with his dad in any meaningful way in these flashbacks either.
No. In fact, the only thing they really do with the dad's death, you know, I understand that the idea that that's the inspiration for him to want to serve the country is because his dad was kind of this like anti, like he was against the country because he served the Soviets. But the only thing they really do with the dad thing for emotion is that towards the end, there's like a scene where he's a teenager and he's got like the urn with his dad's ashes, and he like picks up some of the ashes and sort of sprinkles them into the urn. And it's obviously meant to visually be similar to the space dust that he's going through. And I'm like, I don't hate that you're doing that, but I hate that that's all you're doing with this scene. There should be more to it than just this. I think another big problem for me, to go back to the husband and wife thing, is that I need more of their relationship. I need to actually want to root for them to be back together, because I don't really care about him and I'm having a hard time connecting, and because all we've ever got from her is that she needs to get away from him and that she has to be done. Like, it could have been actually quite interesting over the course of the movie for her to maybe finally admit or reveal why she's left him, right? And obviously, yes, we do learn eventually she had a miscarriage and he didn't even bother going home. That's a pretty good reason for wanting to get a divorce at some point, don't get me wrong. But it felt like there was never like an emotional crescendo for her where she got to finally say it to someone or finally say what the problem was. She was also being closed off the entire movie, funnily enough. Yeah.
No, absolutely. Because, I think the thing that they were trying to get across is the idea that, yes, they both felt alone. They both still feel alone. But the idea is they can be alone together in order to lessen that, in order to not be alone anymore. And, like, I get that. I understand what they're going for. But I wholly agree with what you're saying in that it doesn't feel like there is that crescendo. It doesn't feel like there is any point where either we see the straw that broke the camel's back, or the moment where we get the resolution to it. It just feels like this slow kind of, like, nothing really changed throughout the entirety of it, which is why I opened with the comparison of Eternal Sunshine, because that movie does a fantastic job of showing two broken people, two people who have their own problems that end up clashing with each other, but you, over the course of the movie, get to see why this relationship should work, why it's something that they should aim for. This one, there's nothing in here that makes me feel like they ever had chemistry the entire time.
I mean, what it's begging for? It's begging for, like, a full scene of them meeting, or, like, an early scene of their relationship where we can see them act together, see their chemistry, act, you know, give us the Before Sunrise, like, 10-minute scene where it's, like, convincing the audience that they belong together and they're in love, that there is something there, there's a spark. But all of it's told through these kind of art housey, like, sort of quick dream sequences where you get little snippets of parts of the relationship. And even then, it mostly focuses on the negative by and large. Like, it focuses on the bad memories more than it does the good ones. So, it's very unfulfilling. I have a hard time connecting to Sandler's character. I have a hard time connecting to the marriage and the relationship. As a whole, it's hard to engage with, and like you said right at the start, this is meant to be an emotional movie. And if it doesn't actually connect with you emotionally, then it really has nothing to offer, because nothing else will mean anything, because it's hinging on that working and being what really makes you care about everything that's going on. Because it's not an adventure movie. It's not an action movie. It's not a mysterious, we're investigating space movie, even though that's technically what he's out there to do. That's not really what the point of the movie is. It never is.
No. And like I said, at the beginning, I was kind of thinking, like, okay, is this going to be a thing of, you know, he's losing his mind on this space station? Are we going to go like Sunshine sort of stuff going on here? Is this going to be like, what is the giant spider real? Are we going to get into like alien life exists? At a certain point, we label the pink dust as the beginning, and he keeps talking about wanting to go back. I'm like, are we doing time travel? You throw out a million different like genre things this could end up being, but in the end, it is a introspective story of a man who wants to fix his relationship, and that is what hinges like the rest of the plot, all the little things about what these particles are, whether or not the spider exists. None of that matters. What you need is that emotional connection, and it just floundered there.
Which again is fine as a concept, is making me think of another movie now. Gravity is a movie about a woman who, the whole idea of her being in space is that she's run away from her problems. She's run away of like something in her past that she doesn't like. And we never see it. That's a movie we never get a single flashback. It's all just told through little hints and stuff. As I mean, admittedly, that one's more of a sort of thrilling adventure as she's trying to survive type movie.
Right.
But the character stuff that it is built in there means that by the end of the movie, there's this kind of emotional impact. It's about her basically deciding she wants to live, right? That's what the whole movie's about. It's her deciding, I actually do want to live. I don't want to just let myself die. And that's the heart of the story is behind all the thrills. Here, you can, like, if that's what this was really just going to be, I'd be okay with that too. There's so many things that if it just kind of focused in on something, I could be into it. If it wants to be Eternal Sunshine with all the memory replaying, because that's what made me think of Eternal Sunshine, then be that. If you want to be you're more 2001 thing, where you're going out to investigate something mysterious. If you want to be Solaris, where you're getting all this introspective stuff because of the effects of something weird and space-like, which is kind of what's happening here too, that's fine as well. But fundamentally, the core human drama is completely mishandled because you never get connected to the character. It's too much explaining and beating you over the head rather than actually just showing you moments that let you realize things. You never realize anything as the audience in this. You're just constantly told things. And that is a big problem.
Yeah, once I found out it was written as a book first, I think a lot more clicked into place for me, because the idea that you can be in the character's head without them having to outwardly say something is so much more potent to giving this idea of loneliness and getting that across to the audience than you can do in film like this. I will say there are films that do it fantastically. Like I brought up Moon earlier. I think that movie does a fantastic job of portraying loneliness. Same thing with The Martian.
Yeah, that comes down to adaptation. Like whoever wrote the script did not adapt it to work in the different format. They just explain things, and maybe the spider explains a lot in the book, I don't know, but if in the movie it felt like this crutch they kept leaning on to just explain what was going on constantly. And what makes movies that are like this one work, and a lot of the examples we've given, or even ones that aren't sci-fi at all, that are just relationship dramas that are more introspective and a little art house, what makes them work is connecting to those characters and really feeling like you get that feeling of melancholy that the characters are going through, that they're scared that this is ending, and it feels like the end of the world, and you're hoping for a resolution. But if you're not feeling any of that, then it's just a series of scenes, and you're not connecting to it. I mean, all that's really left for us to talk about, really, is just to go through some other key scenes that we think are worth mentioning.
Yeah, I mean, the big ones that jump out to me is Hanush's first appearance. So, like we said, there was a nightmare sequence, and that nightmare was essentially a spider was, like, crawling underneath his skin, and then he jolts awake and whatnot. And it's probably like 5-10 minutes later where, as he's running through some tests or something like that, he hears a noise. And as he goes into the bathroom, there's just a giant spider in there who's like, oops, sorry, didn't mean to wake you. How's it going? And he then, like, is freaking out because he's trying to convince Control, like, hey, is anyone else seeing this spider? But conveniently, a whole bunch of the cameras are down, so no one's able to check on that for him.
Yeah, it's also, for some reason, the spider really likes the sound of the toilet system, like, being on, and it's really loud, and, like, Sandler hates it, and it keeps waking him up, because he complains about that right from the start of the movie, and it turns out that the spider's been turning it on because it soothes him for whatever reason.
Yep. And the spider is, like, not just a spider. He outwardly explains he is part of, like, an ancient alien race who is from a way far away system, and he traveled across space and time, A, because there was some parasite thing that was destroying his race, so he was running away from that, but B, he just finds humans pretty neat. Like, once he hit our solar system, he was like, that's cool, let me study humans for a while.
Yeah. So that sets up that. Sandler's obviously scared of him and, like, hides in, like, various rooms in the spaceship, but ultimately kinda learns to coexist and, like, offer him some Nutella at one point, which the alien loves the Nutella, the hazelnut chocolate spread. Oh, the alien's all about.
No doubt. I actually, that's one of the few things in this movie that I absolutely love, is that for this rocket to get off as fast as it did, and, like, they're basically a little back subplot is that they're racing the South Korean team to see who's going to get there first, and he's, like, slightly in the lead. But I love this idea that it's completely funded by corporate sponsors. So throughout this movie, he, like, repeatedly has to keep on saying corporate sponsor slogans during, like, big moments. So that way, when it's, like, replayed back on the tapes, they could be like, yes, there's a, if you need to or get rid of germs, use Bombo or whatever.
Yeah, when he's on the call at the start, they go to a commercial break, and you see that he filmed some commercials before he left, like, advertising, like, the cleaning products or the toothpaste or whatever it was. Which, I'll be honest, I never really felt like what the point of all that stuff was, really.
Oh, yeah, I didn't feel like there was any point in the story. It just felt like the only bit of levity that I was getting out of the movie.
Sure.
Like, I was just like, yeah, sure, it's fun. All
but
right.
As soon as they introduced the fact that he did these commercials and he kind of, like, groans at himself as he sees it, I just kind of felt like, okay, are we doing some sort of capitalist commentary in this as well? Mm. It doesn't feel like we are. I mean, by the end of the movie, I don't think it did really go into that. I mean, the only thing I can really say is that it's devaluing, like, the importance of the mission a little bit to him, because he's here because he believes in it, because he's, you know, he wants to make up for all the things that his father did, and they've got him hawking, you know, like, detergent and bomber, whatever that is,
it's a disinfectant to some express,
but it literally comes in these round balls called, and it says bomber on the front, so it looks like a prop from, like, a Mario Brothers or something, where you're like, this is what you throw at the Goombas or some shit, right?
But like, that whole subplot, like, again, it's not even a plot because it doesn't result in anything, but it just gave me my second favorite moment in the movie, which is he says he wants to run, like, a decontamination thing because giant spider is there in the thing, and he's just like, we need to run decontamination now.
Yeah, that's justifiable as anything, reason to run some decontamination, if I can say the word.
It's a hard word to say, but before he's allowed to do it, the Peter on the other end at ground control is like, all right, I've gotten approval, but you got to say the jingle first, and he's forced to go through the jingle for Bomba, and he's like, all right, you're approved. And it's just those tiny little moments that I'm like, all right, if this has to take an even mildly comedic slant to it, I think this is okay for this movie. It's not like slapstick. It's not over the top. It's just a funny little poke at, like, yeah, corporate sponsors, aren't they stupid like that?
Yeah, which would be great if it played into any of the key themes.
Yeah.
But I never felt like it did. Maybe there's more of that in the book. Maybe it's more of a key thing in the book. I don't know. But
I mean, I'm just giving a very cursory glance at the book here. It basically seems to be the same overall, but it does give a bit more onto the idea of his father being communist.
Mm.
And obviously, communist in Czech was replaced by a capitalist system, so maybe it's like commentating on that in some way, that now, where his father was a stout communist,
oh, okay,
he's now representing the capitalist system.
I can see where they're going with that. That's a holdover from that, is that he's now doing that. This is the equivalent to what his father did for the communists, is just hawking products and commercials.
Yeah.
Which, okay, I can respect the intent of that, but I will say it's so stripped back in this movie that because obviously that's why it's still set in Czechoslovakia, because it's kind of important to that part of the backstory. But to be honest, like, they do so little with it that by the end of the movie, I'm like, I mean, I don't know if this was even that important in the movie.
Oh, yeah. No, like, you could have, if you really wanted to, you could have adapted this to America and just say, like, oh, he wasn't a communist. He was part of, like, McCarthyism. He was hunting down communists. And, like, there you go. It would have been the exact same kind of backstory.
Oh, hell, it could have just been his dad came back from Vietnam kind of messed up. That could have been, like, it could have been anything like that. It didn't feel like it mattered that specifically in the movie. It just mattered that he was kind of, like, troubled. Right.
Yeah, the only thing they needed was that the dad felt like he was in the right, but did something bad because of it. That's all that the character requires with what we see in the movie.
But to give credit where credit is due, I do think that you just gave me a decent explanation for the capitalist stuff, is because it's meant to contrast the communist stuff. But yeah. I feel like that might have landed more, though, if they showed, like, more of the communist stuff in the flashbacks.
Exactly. Yeah. Because that's, again, like, so much of this is hinging on the fact that he's making up for the sins of his dad. And I swear to God, the dad does not have over, like, 30 seconds of screen time across this whole movie.
Which can be fine if you find inventive ways to have it come out naturally in the present day story. Like, I actually think, like, I really appreciate good writing when it manages to, like, bring up, like, things from characters' past in the dialogue of the present-day story in a way that doesn't just feel like they're spouting an exposition.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can get the subtext, you can read between the lines and start to kind of put the pieces of the backstory together. It just has to be compelling on its own with what it's doing. This achieved neither of those things.
Yeah.
It didn't do it well in the flashbacks. It didn't do it well as bringing it out in the present-day stuff. It just had a narrator who just explained everything to you the whole time. Let's talk about Lenka a little bit, the wife. So I do love the detail that they're, like, one-to-one chat, like, system that they've installed at her place is basically like an arcade machine that she goes in. It's like a little photo booth that she goes in to talk to him.
I mean, they explicitly say that this is a, like, super high-tech thing. It's faster than light talk. I'm happy that it isn't just, like, an app on your phone. Like, it is a full-size giant machine they had to set up.
But she goes to see her mother, played by Lena Olin, who I've not seen in anything in a long ass time, but
no?
I do remember her from a couple of things back in the, like, late 90s, early 2000s. And even her mom's like, you know, maybe wait till he's back before you make any big decisions. This feels like a pretty awkward time to do this. But she kind of, you know, ignores that advice. The space agency lady comes to see her and is like, hey, by the way, we didn't send that stupid message you left for him. Like, that was a terrible idea. So, you know,
look, if you actually got on the phone and talked with him, there wasn't much we could do to stop you. But why did you think we were going to let that voicemail go through?
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I assume that Lenka didn't think they would check the message first. That obviously was she's not, like, super surprised. She sort of, like, goes, oh, of course you checked it. But it's obviously not something she was anticipating before she did it.
Yeah. There was a part later on in this movie where we get to see one of their, like, random conversations they have, where we get to see how cold Adam Sandler is. And she says, tell me a secret. And I'm like, dude, all of NASA is listening right now. Maybe let's not.
Yeah. You know, so she goes to, like, a, I don't even know what you call this, like a
retreat?
Yeah, a pregnancy retreat for single pregnant women who just need to be surrounded by support and other pregnant women to get through this experience together. And of course, her mum does say, when she mentions this, like, why not just stay with me? Like, I can help. Like, I can. Yeah. I went through it once. You exist. You're alive.
I think I did a pretty good job, all things considered.
Yeah, all on this whole breaking up with your husband when he's in space, which is a bit cold.
Yeah.
But, you know, whatever. The only bit of contact they have, really, until the very end of the movie, is that Adam Sandler convinces the ground guy, Peter, to go tour. And all of the regular comms have shut down, but he's kind of hooked up a phone to, like, the one working, like, system. So it's like a cordless phone from the 90s that he's floating around with talking into. But Peter takes a phone to her and says he just wants you to listen. So she stands there and listens to Adam Sandler basically say...
And this is after he's had all of his introspection.
Yes.
Like, the spider's already abandoned him for being such a douche. Like, he's had all of his introspection.
The spider comes back after this scene because he's done this. Basically, the spider respects that he's tried to, like, make amends and sort of comes crawling back. And I don't mean crawling back in that he's sneaky. I just mean crawling because he's a spider.
He's sneaky, too. He just shows up. He's just like, yeah, I was still here.
But the, he doesn't say much. Like, honestly, this is one of the things that actually, in my memory now, I'm having a hard time really changing, other than the final couple of lines at the end, because it's like I'm laying the cut on. A lot of this conversation and what he says at the end feel pretty similar to me. They're basically just, you know, I regret how things have went down. If I'd known what I know now, I wouldn't have left.
I think he says something along the lines of, like, I'm sorry that I never got to know you. Like, I never asked about you. I was always so concerned about my stuff.
Well, that was one of the things that came up in one of the fight flashbacks, is that she says, you know, when you in a relationship, you both give up a little bit for the other person, and she feels that she's given up a lot, and he's given up nothing. He's just kind of on his space path the entire time without any kind of remorse. But, yeah, and then at the end of the movie, we can go back and talk about the actual floating through the dust in a second, but... basically, he's left there after the spider's dead. We'll talk about that as well. And he's picked up by the Koreans who have arrived. So he's on the Korean spaceship. So the end of the movie is he's finally got, like, another phone, another FTL phone that he can call back home. And he calls her on her cell phone, seemingly, because she's, you know, she's at her car. Because she drove out to, like, I think the house they were building to live in, it seemed like.
They gave no context for that building. I have no idea.
My assumption was that they were building a house where his dad's, like, farmhouse was. Like, this was, like, a new house they were putting there because it wasn't done yet. And there was all this, like... It almost looked... I actually thought they were going to hit me with a twist that he'd already been dead, like, since... It didn't make any sense.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have made any sense because of the way she talks about him throughout the movie. But this, like, sort of shrine of, like, photos of, like, kids' drawings of a spaceman and stuff that are outside. Yeah. Clearly, they're just putting this here in, like, support of him because he's out there. But I legitimately thought it was about to hit me with he's been dead since before the start of the movie. This has all been
The two, like, shifted timelines.
Yeah.
Where one is taking place later than the other. I was expecting that too at one point. And then it just, again, doesn't deliver.
Nah, it doesn't do it. But she answers the phone and he kind of reiterates some of the things he said. But the big thing is, like, no, honestly, if I'd known what I knew now, I wouldn't have left. And one of the things that he hallucinated when he was floating through the dust, he's back in the creek and she's there in her princess outfit from the night they first met. He's in his astronaut suit and he says, hey, can we kiss? Because, you know, because that's one of the things we saw was their first kiss. And she's like, yeah, but it'll kill you. And he's like, I'm okay with that. Which I think, you know, the representation there is quite clear. He's basically saying, being with you is more important to me now than anything else. Like, I'm willing to die to experience that. And he is kind of like floating there. Then the Koreans come and pick him up. And he brings it back up on the phone. He says, about the first kiss, like, hey, like, can I kiss you again? And her final line is, well, it was a good kiss. And then it cuts to the title screen.
Yeah, specifically he asks, like, would you do that again? Would you still kiss me again? And, yeah, and it just, I don't know how I feel about that ending. It feels like, obviously, they are making steps to repairing their relationship. Obviously, there's the promise that, like, things will be different when he gets back, but it still feels like it isn't enough. Like, I still wanted there to just be a little bit more to that.
Well, I'm actually I am fine with this ending. I think this is a strong cut to black if the rest of the movie earned it.
That's fair, yeah.
But it didn't. That's probably what it is. I think if the rest of the movie had made me care about this, and this was the, and the final beat of the movie was just seeing, like, is there hope that she'll actually give him a chance? And if we actually cared about him getting a second chance, and her final lines kind of implying yes, basically, without saying it in as many words, I think that would work. But obviously, I don't feel like I felt nothing for these two characters the whole movie. Yeah. So it landed with a thud.
Even for her part of things, like, we see her getting that call of him, like, saying, I'm so sorry, I wish I could do things differently. And then there's, like, two or three sequences in between there where she's kind of just conferring with other people and she's alone by herself looking at things. I still didn't get from her side that, like, she was forgiving him. It just kind of felt like more stuff.
Yeah, she was looking up at the stars at one point, talking to another pregnant woman, and then she's inspired to go out and drive to this place, and she sees, like, a drawing that a kid's done that seems to look like their first date, or what they were dressed like, where he's a spaceman and she's, like, a princess. And clearly that's going to make her remember that, but
The only other thing that got it was during his, like, final touchdown, as he's going to get the particles and, like, run the tests on them, the person who's running the, like, TV program says, oh, yes, you and your wife, you are star-crossed lovers, and we're hoping the best for both of you. And she's just kind of walking away as that's happening, which visually tells me she's not forgiving him, and she's just leaving the whole thing behind.
Yeah, I think they could have played it just slightly differently, where she sort of paused and listened to it for a second and then walked away, and then you could treat it as, no, hearing that's what motivated her to go and, like, sort of reflect and look at the, you know, the house and, you know, figure out her feelings kind of thing. I mean, the whole thing is that the spider goes outside because he's infected. It turns out he's actually dying. Those parasites that killed the rest of his race are killing him, and Adam Sandler puts on his spacesuit, grabs one of those bombers, and tries to disinfect him outside in space. Which, by the way, the clasp that holds his suit to the tether to the ship just unclasped with the first little bump, and I'm like, surely that would be the thing they put a lot of effort into to make sure it can't just do that.
Look, man, that was left over from the Soviet days. They've just been repurposing it for three decades.
All right. So we get this whole sequence where the spider, who he's brought chocolate spread for, he gives him the chocolate spread, which I can only imagine in space, that because space is also really cold, so I would feel like it would just freeze, but, I mean, what do I know?
I don't know the exacts of it. I do know it's a bit more complicated than it's just cold, because there does need to be, like, particle transfer in order for stuff to freeze, so it's a bit more complicated than that. But yes, it would be very hard and tough to break into. I doubt this spider creature could do it.
Yeah, all I'm saying is I'm sure it won't just taste the same. If you could somehow survive in space without, like, any, like, apparatus, and you try to bite into something, you know, even something as soft and gooey as chocolate spread, I just don't feel like it would work very well.
Right. So before we get to this final scene, actually, can I just give, like, a little bit of the in-between of what the spider's been doing?
Oh, by all means. Yeah, what's the spider been doing?
So, obviously, we described when he first shows up, and then Adam Sandler's kind of just like, okay, there's a giant spider here, I'm just going to live with that. And throughout this movie, honestly, majority of the movie is just the spider coming up and saying, like, hey, whenever you remember something, I can also experience it, and then I can, like, talk through it like I'm your therapist sort of thing. And Adam Sandler says, I don't want to do that. And he says, tough, it's just going to happen. So throughout the movie, he starts getting more and more information. And the spider treats it as like fish out of water sort of thing, where he's like, why do you humans make promises that you do not keep? Unless that's just a you thing, because you're such a dick. And he keeps on calling Adam Sandler out for his behavior, saying like, oh, you treated your wife poorly here. Why are you keep on leaving her? Until finally it gets to the part where she had a miscarriage and he left. And the spider, which he's already named Hanush at this point, based off of some story his dad told him, is like, oh, I get it now. You just want to be alone. Like, you push people away, and so I'm going to leave as well. Goodbye. And yeah. So he says
also,
he's leaving.
The idea that he named the spider after something related to his dad is obviously an important, mm-hmm. like, you know, character thing. Like, he's like, if this represents the guilt and the sins of his father, then it makes sense that he's named it something related to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing is that he also doesn't even know, like, Hanush is based off of, like, a fairy tale or a story or something like that, but, like, he doesn't even know if it's true. So that kind of goes back to whether or not Hanush is actually here or if he's just being hallucinated. But yeah, no, so Hanush disappears, and that's when Adam Sandler feels so bad he calls up his wife and says, hey, I'm super sorry. And then Hanush shows back up and just be like, hey, yeah, I, you know, I saw what you did. And also, we're both going to that big cloud thing, and it's super scary to go in there alone. So let's go in together as buddies. And also, I'm dying because of parasites.
Yes. So, and as they're going through the purple cloud, right, and he's out in the spacesuit, you hear, like, bits of the flashbacks, you hear like noises and sounds, and but mostly stuff relating to him, and it felt very much like other movies that have done this where it's like, oh, you're experiencing all of time because this is the beginning. It felt very derivative. Nothing about it felt really special, which is why it was really frustrating towards the end when Sandler's basically like, I understand now, like, I understand everything now. And I just feel like, you're telling me you understand based on this experience, but I didn't see anything whilst you went through this experience then let me feel like you had seen something that would change you.
This feels like when I said I understand in like my college chemistry course, which is to say I understand to the point of please stop explaining it to me. I'm not going to care to learn more about this.
Yes. So this is kind of like that scene in Superman where Superman's flying Lois for the first time and she's like, can you read my mind? You know, she's thinking that. But here, the spider actually can read his mind. So this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
I would love that scene of Superman just recut where she's like, can you read my mind? And she starts the poem. But like after that first line, she's just like, yes, I'm in here, Lois. What would you like to know?
Or it just cuts to Superman's thoughts and he's thinking, oh God, she's so hot. She's so hot. I bet she's so impressed. I'm flying her over the side.
Why am I wearing spandex right now? Oh God, this is a very poor choice.
So... yeah, I didn't get a whole lot of that. Obviously, you get the scene where the parasites sort of consume Hanush, and
as he's eating the hazelnut spread, like he throughout this entire thing, because Hanush like runs out of the ship because he's like about to die and he's just trying to escape. Adam Sandler runs out. He grabs the bomba. He's like got this whole thing going on, and then he grabs the hazelnut spread specifically. Like, well, if you're dying, here you go. It'll make death easier. And he's like, yes, it will. Thanks, Nutella. Thumbs up.
Yeah, the final line from Hanush is, it tastes like home. Because he mentioned earlier on that it reminded him of something from his planet. And it's also what Sandler said earlier about coffee, because he's like, what's this hot water bean juice you keep drinking? So again, it's also this idea of like not abandoning everything and actually going home. Like, you're not being scared to face all your problems, which again is also a big part of what this movie is. It's about him actually facing up to the people in his life and the decisions that he's made and making up for all that stuff.
And it's also, I mean, we kind of glossed over the pink cloud thing at this point, but during this final mission, like as he's going to test the particles and see what they're about, things start going wrong to the point where his ship is like irreparably going to destroy itself. And he's able to disengage and theoretically leave according to mission control. But he says, no, screw that. My spider friend is dying out there. I gotta go help him. And Mission Control's like, what are you doing, man? And he just bails on the whole thing, which of course is the idea of he's putting this other person over himself. He's not running away. He's literally willing to die for this person that he's opened up to.
Or subtextually, he's literally saving his own subconscience. He's saving you could read that a couple of ways. I think the fact that he never even tries to tell Mission Control about the spider, because he knows it's going to make him sound crazy, is an interesting choice, at least, because it's kind of like... because the movie would probably play out very differently if they thought he was like, okay, he's lost it. He's seen a giant spider. Yeah. Like, what do we do here? Like, he knows not to tell them that, which means on some level, he probably also thinks it's in his own head. And he's like, I'm just going to accept this and deal with it.
Yeah, and I think having the nightmare sequence with the spider just before this is double down evidence that the audience should probably believe that as well in the long term.
Yeah, alternatively, if the spider is real, you could argue that that was just the spider being in his head, and that's why he was in his dream. Because, you know, as we see throughout the rest of the movie, he's in his memories. He literally, at one point, it cuts to, like, teenage Adam Sandler, and the spider's, like, hugging him. In fact, there's a scene where Adam Sandler hugs the spider in present day as well.
Look, I'm not arachnophobic. Like, I don't have a problem with spiders in a general sense, but, like, that was too far. Like, that scene, I was just like, look, it's supposed to be this emotional moment of him, like, fully accepting Anoush, and they're going to go face the end together, but, like, please stop. Your eight legs are scaring me.
Yeah. So, you know, like, there's nothing wrong with any of the movie's core concepts, but I've seen them all done much better in lots of other movies, both sci-fi and not sci-fi. Like, so...
Yeah.
It's got a whole lot left to offer, and sadly, it just is another Netflix movie that just kind of like is in that middling to bad tier of just existing that no one should ever go back and watch again. It's another thumbnail on their like home screen. They can just fill out a library, and no one will probably ever care about. And look, if some people like this, fine, great. I can almost see like a certain audience of an age. Like maybe teenagers who are have not quite discovered like proper art house movies yet might find something special in this because they've not seen it yet. But otherwise, I feel like for most people who have experienced much better examples of all these types of movies, they'll probably just find this a bit of a chore.
Yeah, I think that someone who comes across this who hasn't seen their Solaris, who hasn't seen their Eternal Sunshine, they might be enraptured by the ideas that are being presented here. But if they do end up coming across those other films, it's going to be a concept of like, oh, they did that much better in this one rather than Spaceman. It's just a matter of what you come across first, because the concepts themselves are solid. They just aren't executed as well as other things have been.
Yeah. And I even get the tone that it's going for, because I've seen that done. I mean, Eternal Sunshine is probably kind of close, but even the more hopeful kind of side to it, where it always feels like it's building up to a happier type ending, I would say that I've seen movies that have that kind of tone as well, where it's about saving the relationships, about saving the marriage.
I saw a comparison in the reviews to Ad Astra. I had not seen that one, so I can't make a comparison.
That's even Max Richter. I mean, that movie's not great, but I did like it because, one, the visuals were really great, the music was fantastic. Mm-hmm. The plot does have a couple of wonky moments, but I definitely enjoyed the ride in that movie.
Okay.
As opposed to this, where I don't think I really enjoyed much of any of it.
That's fair. I will. My favorite moment in the movie is such an inconsequential moment, but it's such like a real character beat that I really appreciated it. And it was the moment where Adam Sandler sends Peter to go talk to his wife, and the wife is called out of like a yoga class or something, and Peter's just sitting there with like his arms folded, and he's just like waiting for Lenka to come out. And he stands up and turns around, and like, obviously he's there to just say, hey, your husband wants to talk to you. But he immediately recognizes how it looks. So the first things out of his lips are, oh no, he's alive. And she's just like, oh God, yes, thank you, Jesus. Don't come in here with that dour face, Jesus. It's such a real little character beat. I loved it.
I kind of like that moment too. And I guess to serve the purpose of the movie, it's showing that she at least cares if he's dead. Like, it's at least that's a tether to hang on to, I suppose. But it's obviously not enough to save anything. I mean, honestly, I'm at least impressed we got to this runtime of the review, because I was a little bit worried. Like, about two-thirds into it, I'm like, this is just so much of the same thing over and over again, of, like, living through these memories and the spider, like, saying, why are humans like this? What?
I really like how the spider, though, says, like, several times of this, it's like, are humans like this or are you like this? And it's like, okay, yeah, we get it, I'm a dick, thank you.
It may have been more interesting though if he did just think all humans were like that, and it maybe forced Adam Sandler to finally defend the rest of humanity and go, no, Hanush, it's not like lots of humanity are great, this is me. I'm like, forcing him to say that might have been far more interesting from a character development point of view.
But just, hey, hi, I'm the problem. It's me.
Ah, oh, dear. Yeah. Frustrating. I think it fails in just about everything it's trying to do, which is a shame. Because what it's trying to do, I like what it's trying to be, I just don't think it succeeds at any of it. Yeah. And it made it kind of repetitive and a chore to watch. So with all that said, David, what are you going to rate Spaceman?
10 out of 10. We'll watch again. Definitely. Obviously, that's a lie. I don't know. I mean, obviously, it's not going to crack like even a 7. The question is, do I think it is above the average point of a 5? And honestly, I'm coming up hard against that. I'm not sure it is. I'm looking for anything that I gave like lower than a 5 just as a comparison point here. Yeah, I think this one is definitely on the lower end of things, but I'll still end up giving it just like a blank 5. It's not like I'm angry at the movie. It's not like I think that it made horrible choices and like actively maybe hate it. But by the time I left it, I just felt like I'm never going to want to watch that again. It's just going to the point where you were saying that conversation where he's on the phone, the emotional point of the movie, apologizing to his wife and saying like, oh, I'm so sorry for all this. Like I was in the same boat. I don't remember almost anything from that call. And I don't remember half the memories they went through either. Yeah. Nothing made an impact on me. So I can't really say it was good or bad. It was just nothing. It was, you know what it was? You know how in the movie, those particles, like he tries to put one in the glass and it just phases right through it?
Yeah.
This was that. It's completely inactive with my mind. It just passed through my eyeballs and continued out the other side. That's all it was.
Yeah. Like, obviously, it's not the worst thing ever. It's not a complete train wreck, necessarily. It's just really just missing the mark and just about everything it's setting out to do, and that's kind of a shame. I think I am going to just be a little harsher than you and give it a 4.5. It's okay. Just not hitting what it's supposed to be hitting, which is a shame because I do think conceptually it's hitting a lot of the beats that I would like it to. But ultimately, it never really feels like it has its own voice either. Like, one of the things that would have separated it is like something that's its own stamp. Like, whereas I just kind of feel like a hodgepodge of all these other stories that are just bundled together and then poorly kind of presented and poorly executed. So
I feel like the movie was kind of banking on the fact of, oh, it's a giant talking alien spider to be the stamp. But by the time the movie hit the end, I was so used to him that I'm like, you know, he's there, whatever.
Nah, you have to do something more than that. You have to actually give us a compelling character story. Mm-hmm. And this just kind of missed the mark. This to me feels like what people who don't like art house movies think all art house movies are. This is the sort of incomprehensible kind of like mush that I think those people will say, oh, even all the good art house movies are like this. And they're not. There's actually a lot going on here. But that type of art house movie that they think all art house movies are do exist. And this is kind of one of them. So, there you go. That's Spaceman. So just before David gets to his homework, I'll just say that if you do want to support the show and all the other shows that we do, you get bonus things over in Patreon, patreon.com/MailFuzzTV. Every month, me and David do the Criterion Cut, where we review a movie from the Criterion Collection, some of the best movies ever made. We've reviewed Akira Kurosawa movies, Ingmar Bergman movies, bunch of stuff like that. So check that out. We also do extra reels at the $5 tier and up, which is some of the worst movies ever made, sometimes so bad that they're amazing, but sometimes just torture. It's really a roll of the dice every time. But we've done some of the biggies like Mac and Me, Troll 2, a whole host of things. So,
yep.
And the many, many works of Neil Breen. But
We will continue until I kill myself.
So go check out all that stuff and also the other bonuses for other shows like Screams After Midnight, the horror movie podcast that I do with them. So every week, David goes back to before he started the show and he sees a sci-fi movie that he's not, well, usually not seen, but sometimes it's a rewatch, but for the most part, seeing something for the first time. So David, what was your homework movie for this week?
Well, it was a rewatch, specifically because I have to make my thoughts known before a new release comes out. I watched Godzilla v. Kong. I know, what a shock. It's not like I said this was going to be it last week. I had seen this one only the one time before. I can't remember specifically after watching it the first time whether or not I really thought it was good. I enjoyed it. That part I remember, but I can't remember leaving it whether or not I thought it was good. This time around, nah. It's not like a good movie. I'm not going to pretend like it is, but I did have fun. And I think the thing that I like the most about this is that because they have now fully transitioned in the Godzilla Legendary franchise from, oh, we're taking this super seriously, to this is just stupid monster fights from now on.
I mean, they instantly did that with the very next movie they made, but yeah, go on.
That's fair. They at least pretended the second one was going to be okay. Unless you count Kong as the second one, in which case, yeah, that's still monster fighting. But no, I appreciate the fact that it was under 2 hours. I appreciate the fact that they just did what they wanted to do. They showed the scenes they wanted to. They got the bare minimum in terms of the people plot, and they just kept it going. They just did what they wanted to, and they kept the audience engaged. I really appreciate that, especially as obviously last week we did Dune pushing up against 3 hours, and we were constantly saying it's a bit much. So yeah, no, I had a fun time the whole way through, even the second time around. I will say, looking at the cast list of Godzilla X Kong compared to Godzilla V Kong and seeing who's going to carry over, not a fan. There's specifically the character that was introduced in Godzilla V Kong, which is the podcaster Bernie, who's a conspiracy theorist. I hated his entire subplot. I was just actively disengaged with all of that, and it felt completely pointless to the movie at large.
I don't remember it well enough to have a strong opinion right now. I'll probably give it a quick rewatch before the new one comes out. It's not a good movie, not by any means. I had fun. I mean, I'm always a little bit sad with these movies that it doesn't have the tone of that first one. Godzilla 2014, I kind of loved how that movie felt, but I'm down for some nice, simple, silly monster stuff. The first time I watched this, it was definitely all this Hollow Earth stuff, but them having basically a spaceship that was flying through a portal, and I'm like, this has just jumped the shark completely. But hey, when Godzilla and Kong were fighting, mailed spoilers here, but Kong got his ass kicked, I was into that. Okay?
How dare you, sir? To be fair, I only back Kong because I know you back Godzilla. I'm kind of split on it. I don't really care either way.
That dumb ape got his ass whooped, and it was a delight.
You just wait for the team-up movie, because obviously the villain's going to be some kind of other ape, and he's going to whoop Godzilla's ass.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think dumb fun, although I would never blame anyone for thinking it's trash and hating it, but it's just the right kind of silly and stupid for me to get some enjoyment out of it. And I think only getting one of them every few years is the right pacing. I think if they tried to MCU this, where there was different monster movies two or three times a year, it would get old so fast. But it's been a few years since V-Kong. I'm just my appetite's just about ready. And we just got a great serious Godzilla movie from Japan. Mm-hmm. So, it's not going to be anywhere near as good as that movie, obviously, but it'll be a different thing. It'll be a nice taste. They're clearly hiding whoever the big final villain is, just like they did with the last one. So, I don't know who it's going to be, but we'll see. I'm excited. Yeah.
I'm hoping they pull back from the past. I do love all the little hints and winks and nods they give to Toho's library and their history. So I hope they continue down that path. But if they want to launch their own stuff, so be it. I'll be just as interested to see the path it goes. If I have to give this one a score, 7.5. It's
for a movie you started by saying it's not a good movie, 7.5 is actually quite friendly to it.
No, absolutely. It is 100% based off of just dumb fun. And the fact that I ended that movie and I said, that was stupid, I can't wait for the next one. That's the kind of mindset I go into with that.
Yeah. I remember watching it the first time and early on being like, why are you making it look like Godzilla's the bad guy? I don't think I like this. Why are we going down this path?
Yeah.
But that's
the part I really hope they explore, though, that was set up in this that I kind of forgot about, is that Kong is the defender of man, whereas Godzilla is the defender of nature. And I like that dichotomy of, yeah, they can work together when both are at risk, but like, if all of a sudden man's causing a problem, then there's gonna be a fight.
Anywho, that is the show, everyone. That has been the Atomic Sam Experiment. Hopefully you enjoyed. We did do Dune Part 2 last week. If you didn't catch that, maybe worth going and having a look. Next week on the show, what do we have? We have Innerspace. We've got this is a vote winner from our patrons, Joe Dante film, one of our 80s votes that we've been doing recently. So, you know, come back and see what that's all about. And Godzilla X Kong will be our next new release in a few weeks' time. But we got some juicy stuff. We've even got another ape movie before then.
I'll tell you what, I've been trying to pace myself, but I am like on the verge of being aped out here. between King Kong and all the apes movies, I'm having trouble.
Well, yeah, not got any left or now, right? All of the new ones, obviously.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, the new ones. I'm hoping that I don't get aped out before then.
Well, don't watch any other movies with apes in them.
They just keep happening. I don't know where they come from.
All right, everyone, thank you very much for joining us. We always appreciate it. Keep watching science fiction and computer at Salsa.